Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women, and beer makes everything better. Except Hitler. Because fuck that guy.
Fuck that guy. If it wasn't clear.
Yeah.
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
We're the Drunk Guys, and this week we are reading On Tyranny by Timothy Snyder, 20 Lessons from the 20th Century. And we're going to start with a beer. Nate, you brought this beverage.
First lesson.
Because you hate us.
First lesson, don't drink this German beer, because, okay.
Unless they sponsor the show, then it, yeah. I fucking love it.
5 stars. could you help me pronounce this, because I have
I'm going to do my best. So, based on what I learned from Duolingo, this should be pronounced Rittergutz, Rittergutz, Gose, Gosa. I've heard both pronunciations. It is the original Rittergutz Gosa. It is a sour German beer.
None of those fucking imitators.
No, fuck that. This is the OG shit. Kind of looks like Ebenezer Scrooge. Sour German beer with salt and spice. According to the label, it has a World Beer Awards gold.
The saltiest beer.
It's a Leipzig tradition since 1738. It is 4.7% alcohol, and it is sold in a bottle. I think it's just far too large for a beverage that, oh god, appears this terrible.
This smells exactly like something I've smelled before, but I can't place it.
That's just. Yeah. You know what? That is not nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be.
It's not super strong.
Almost flavorless. It smells 1,000 times stronger than it tastes.
It has just the faintest like tang to it. Mm-hmm. There's like a little bit in there. But I've had sour beers that are fucking
so strong.
I was prepared for this so to be ungodly.
Like it was fermented in an asshole or something. You know,
well, I mean, I'm sure there's one out there that's good that was fermented in an asshole. They have that coffee bean that the, you know, the rodents eat and they shit out the beans and people pay $1 billion.
We talked about that literally in the last episode.
Did we?
Yep.
Yeah. Jimmy just slept off last week.
I can't remember almost anything.
It's funny though, before you reminded me that we had talked about that, I was like, I drank a beer with that. And I'm pretty sure I talked about that last time, too.
Yeah.
I feel like a board of things we've already talked about.
Well, you know what? I think we're actually going to have to get a board of beers we've already drunk, because it's going to be a long goddamn list.
Yeah.
And I hope this doesn't reappear, even though it's not that bad. So why did you choose this, aside to test our palates?
It had a German name.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what it takes to be on the Drunk Guys Book Club.
And this book is mostly about Hitler.
Or is it?
Well, okay. It is. No, it's still definitely about Hitler. But you know what? When else would I ever try this? You know, probably never. That's probably fine too. But
if I saw it on the list, I'd be like, not that one.
Yeah. Well, anyway, guys. So here's why we're reading this book, is because this episode is going to come out right around January 20th, which will mark 1 year of the Trump presidency. And now this book was written by this historian, Timothy Snyder. It's a very short book. He put it together right after the election as a way to talk about, you know, a bunch of things. So now that it's been a year, one thing we're going to talk about is, was he right? Was he wrong? And how are things shaping up a year into the Trump administration?
Well, I think let's go for a second beer just because I want to drink something, and I don't want to drink that.
Right.
Because I know this is your answer for how the year has been going.
So this beer is called Delirium Nocturnum. because that's how this entire year has felt to me, like a night terror fever dream. It's also a Belgian beer, and Belgium was Hitler's backdoor, so it also applies.
It was his name for Eva Braun's ass. Oh, Belgium, yeah. I'm invading it. No, Adolf, it's not your birthday.
Oh my god, alright, so anyway, I know nothing else about this beer.
It's got elephants on it.
It does have
a pink elephant. Because it's named after, it's part of the same company that makes Delirium Tremens. Uh-huh. I have another glass for you if you want. Nate's going straight hillbilly. Let me get you a paper bag to serve that in. I feel like this is stronger than it tastes.
It is.
Is this like 8 or 9% alcohol?
8.5.
8.5?
Yeah.
Strong-ish. Well,
what's the Tremens?
It's strong.
Tremens is like 9.
Yeah, Tremens is about 9.
It's not as sweet as the Tremens. But no,
it's also like a little darker than the Tremens.
Yeah.
It's the first time I've had this. I've had Tremens quite a few times. I had a bottle of Tremens on New Year's Eve. Someone had been saving, and it... The yeast and shit had settled in it, and it looked like phlegm floating in the beer. It was really gross. You had to be drunk to drink it. It was the only way to get through.
I had that happen. It was a car bomb that someone let sit too long.
It curdles?
Yeah. Yeah. I know. They are good to begin with, but they are infinitely worse when they've got, like, oatmeal on them.
Oh, yes. Oatmeal car bomb. Irish grandma car bomb. Yeah.
Okay, anyway.
I like this beer. There's not much going on. I don't know. No.
Not a super strong flavor for an 8.5% beer.
I guess it's probably a thing brewers aspire to make a stronger beer. That, I mean, that's like a display of skill, right? To make a beer that's like not overpowering at that point, like one of the other beers we're going to drink in a little bit, is certainly quite the opposite. Mm. So Snyder has 20 lessons from the 20th century. Can't wait for the sequel. 21 lessons.
So
from the
Timothy
21st Snyder
is a historian. He mostly writes about Hitler and Stalin, mostly in the World War II time period.
And the Holocaust.
He's a history professor at Princeton, I believe. Maybe it was Yale.
Yeah,
one of
the smart schools.
He speaks 6 languages and can read 4 more. So in terms
so
of
he's slacking,
writing a book only this long. Yeah, right?
Oh, so he's a super educated guy, no doubt about that. What are some of his lessons for us to learn? They're very pithy. They're each lesson is expressed in like a little pithy one-liner kind of way. And then there's 2 pages, 3 pages about explaining that lesson, usually through the lens of Hitler, though sometimes Stalin, and often comparing that then to results of the 2016 election or the 2016 election itself, and saying, we need to learn something about this. There's an ominous parallel here.
You know, I'll just read a couple of them. Do not obey in advance. Defend institutions. Beware of the one-party state. Stand out. Oh, look at that. Read books. That is one of... actually, that's not one of his listed ones, but he does talk about that. Read books. Well, there you go.
That's a good one.
Establish private life. Listen for dangerous words. Learn from peers in other countries. Contribute to good causes. Be as courageous as you can. Believe in truth. Things like that. Be wary of paramilitaries. That sounds like sensible advice, I would say.
Sure.
It's not a thing I'd have to worry. I thought I'd have to worry about ever.
It's not a thing I particularly worry about right now.
No.
So a big chunk of the stuff in the book, like when I was reading, I was like, this sounds familiar. This sounds like Ordinary Men by Christopher Browning, which he later cites as books you should read, which is a book about a book I read for a grad class on history of Germany. And it's about how the majority of the executions and the murders that took place in the Holocaust were actually not in the camps. They were these police squadrons of not even necessarily Nazi party members, just guys, German guys, sent out. There's a Polish village here. Go kill all the Jews in this village.
It's like the SS?
Not even SS. No, SS is elite.
Just like
it's
regular.
Just like, yeah, like okay. This is your assignment. And guys kind of going like, well, that's the job. I guess I have to do that. And then going through it's like a really harrowing read because it's just page after page of these testimonies of guys going like, and then how they justified to themselves and made this okay in their mind at the moment. They're like, well, I figured someone else just shot that kid's mother, so he can't live without his mother, so I might as well kill that kid too then. I'm doing him a favor at this point, basically. Like, that kind of rationalizing that they're doing. So reading his book, when he's like, don't obey in advance, beware of the paramount military, he's like, this sounds like that book. Sounds like he's just kind of taking that book and here's a Cliff Notes version of it. Just fine. But
the layman's
version. That book came out 20 years ago. Like, I don't know why this had to come out to remind us of it.
Most,
book's still in print.
Most regular folks aren't going to read that.
Most regular folks aren't going
to
read this book.
No, certainly. But 7 or 8 more.
But they're
right?
More likely to. Yeah,
it's very short, and they can feel accomplished.
I mean, I've read things online. People are like, I bought a copy for everybody I know. Or I just buy extra copies and leave them on the subway so people can read
dumb.
It. Like some people, I mean, it's like a, I don't want to say pamphlet, but like the pamphlets of like Thomas Paine and Karl Marx and stuff. Some people see this as that kind of in that legacy.
I can see why they do. I don't want to leave a bunch of copies on the subway
for a bum to wipe his ass with.
That is what they would happen.
That is exactly what happened to those copies. On trannies. Someone was very disappointed when they picked up on trannies and realized it wasn't that.
That's nothing about Hitler. So. Here's a question. So if this book is about the dangers of fascism, of totalitarianism, it's been a year of the Trump administration. Do we need to fear that? Is even a little bit? Is there even a reason for this book to exist?
I mean, I was arguing about this with one of my very, very liberal friends who... isn't Nate, actually. And they,
or me.
Not that I'm very conservative, but the thing that I was saying, like, I find the basis of the book offensive, that he's comparing Trump to Hitler. And I don't like Trump. I didn't vote for him. I think he's a fucking putz. But I think it's offensive to compare anybody to Hitler, because Hitler is so awful.
Well, I mean, it's for the common vernacular. It's like, if you compare him to other dictators you've never heard of, they'd be like, I don't understand.
If you compared him to Mussolini... that might be a better comparison, almost nothing about Mussolini. So,
if he's talking about fascism, why does he talk about Mussolini at all? Right? Mussolini fucking makes the shit up.
But Mussolini was a fucking idiot. Oh wait, maybe he should talk about Mussolini.
Maybe I'm not saying he should, but like it cheapens it when you talk. It cheapens what Hitler does when you compare him to anybody else.
Certainly,
and it's also insulting on a small level. Not that it bothers me at all to Hitler to compare him to Trump, because Hitler had a plan. Hitler knew what was going on, and Hitler had people around him who were competent bureaucrats.
Hitler himself was a talented politician. That's really what made him so dangerous. He was a talented politician who had a plan, who had a goal.
Love crystal meth.
He knew what he wanted to accomplish, and the people around him weren't a confederacy of dunces.
Ooh.
Ooh, teaser next week. Oh, my God. So that is definitely true. I would say, I mean, you definitely have a good point that comparing Trump to Hitler is kind of dumb because Hitler was obviously, like, the worst ever.
Could it be that he wrote this soon after the election? He didn't really know how it was going to end up. Maybe he thought that things would go a little smoother than they have been. He did not know that everyone would be this fucking stupid.
So, wait, are you defending it, saying that he had high hopes that he would live up to Hitler's legacy? And he's disappointed that he was not as competent as Hitler?
There's always a chance.
No. But here's a better point, though. The thing that's holding Trump back from being the authoritarian he kind of wants Trump to be, although what he actually believes is like a totally different question, but the thing holding Trump back from being the actual authoritarian he kind of wishes he was, is his complete fucking incompetence.
Sure, almost everyone around him.
And everyone around him. So what if, instead of it's Trump being president, what if it's somebody with the same type of message and style, but isn't a complete fucking idiot? Would that be worth being maybe a little bit afraid of?
I mean, like, it opened
the
door.
The book was written, though.
Well, yes, but
that's not what the book even admonishes us to consider.
I would say most people, or at least at the time of the election, even though, sure, plenty of people knew that Trump was an idiot, I don't think people kind of thought things would be better than this. Would be less chaotic and crazy.
I remind myself constantly that people way smarter than me voted for Trump. People who...
It wasn't just dumb people.
No, not at all. Like, people way more educated than me, way smarter.
Dumb people also voted for him.
Sure, but dumb people also voted for everybody. Yeah. So that's not...
It's not necessarily an intelligence thing.
So, although what I'm trying to say, like, not... You know, there are people who saw something in Trump and they saw all the same things that I saw and much more probably because I didn't pay that much attention. And they're like, yeah, that's my guy. At the end of the... When I weigh everything out, that's the better choice for me.
I mean, they might have been going on the whole Republican train of saying... Congress and Senate will get it done. He'll just sign whatever they tell him to. He's just a figurehead.
Well, I mean, and
if he had been even a modicum more competent, that could have happened.
Well, if the Senate and Congress, you know, Senate and the House weren't a bunch of fucking knuckleheads.
Well, yes, that too. But he definitely made it harder by, like, just everything he does. No one's going to, like, work with him.
But, like,
it could have been much different.
Well, it could have been different if, for example, the Republicans had actually spent the last 6 years making a plan to repeal and replace Obamacare instead of just whining. Like, if they had a real plan, they could have gotten it done. Here's our fucking chance. I mean, they could have started drafting it November 10th in 2016 and be like, great, this will be on your desk the first day.
Actually, they could have started drafting it in 2010 when they said they were starting to draft
it. Sure, I know. But, like, all you say, oh, some of those old fucking assholes died or retired or got voted out. Let's say November 16th, they go like, all right, let's have that. First thing, we've been talking about this for 6 years, 8 years, whatever it is. Day one, it's on the president's desk. Sign this thing. That would have shown fucking...
Like they said they were going to.
It could have very easily happened.
Mm-hmm. Not that I would expect them to come up with something decent, but I'd be fucking impressed if they did that.
Having a plan.
Instead, I think this year, the Congress worked the fewest amount of hours that they've ever worked.
Trump has signed the least bills of any president ever time.
He signed like three. He said too much. Most of these focused on executive orders.
There was just one he forgot to sign and he left the ceremony.
Is that right?
Yeah, he came into the ceremony and just talked some shit and then left without signing it.
Well, not talk some shit. A reporter shouted out a question about the Russia the Russia investigation, and Trump just, so I have to go now. And then literally turned around and walked out of the room without signing the executive order.
Speaking of that, and the Russian investigation, and the tyranny in this book, I think this beer is appropriate to bring out. It's by Distill Brewery? Distill? I think that's Dutch for the style or something like that. Anyway, it's called Dosvidaniya, and it is
so multicultural.
Russian Imperial Stout, and it has like a matryoshka doll.
Russian Imperial Stout?
Oh, yeah, man.
Is that a thing?
Oh, yeah.
Was it full of sadness and despair?
It wears a babushka, and it...
That means grandmother.
Well, it's like that stupid hat thing. That's what we did in this country.
Where's your grandmother?
This was brewed in the hut of Baba Yaga. yeah, Russian Imperial Stout. I think we talked about that in a past episode at some point.
We probably did. But Mike, remind us.
It's
what's
a bit,
in a Russian Imperial Stout?
Imperial, just, you know what a stout is, right? Stouts come from...
this is a czarist beer.
So basically, in 19th century London, they made porters, which were like the heavier, shittier, darkier beers for the porters to drink. They're named after the people who drank them.
Is that what it is?
And then they made stronger ones, were called stout porters, which later then just kind of became stouts.
Those midget porters.
Yes.
Overweight porters.
Yes, right. like really burly stevedores. the stout and porter is interchangeable terms, whether, you know, for the most part. Imperial is just, you know... is a term nowadays used for anything that's, like, bigger than 7% alcohol, more or less. But the legend goes that brewers were making stouts to ship to the Russian imperial court, and then this is, you know,
it's
in the
like,
days of
the, like
the
Russian
traveling to the North
of the
Sea.
IPA.
Yeah, of sort of like the IPA thing, yeah. And the beers were imperial because they're for the imperial court, and they're for the Russian imperial court since they were Russian imperial stouts. So as a style, they're just bigger ports. They're really limited. It's more like there's not like a limit to how much of it it could have. It could be extremely hoppy, sometimes extremely bitter. They're usually on the sweet side. They're dark, usually like jet black. Like this has,
I would say,
a dark brown head.
Thick.
Yeah, saying that just sounds really not.
All right, we'll cut that.
No, you can say it's cool, man. That's your, you live your truth. But it's this imperial because they're for the imperial court, and they're for the Russian imperial court since they were Russian imperial staff. So as a style, they're just bigger ports. They're really limited. It's more like there's not like a limit to how much of it it could have. It could be extremely hoppy, sometimes extremely bitter. They're usually on the sweet side. They're dark, usually like jet black. Like this has,
I would say,
a dark brown
thick
head. Yeah, there's, saying that just sounds really not.
All right, we'll cut that.
No, you can say it's cool, man. That's your, you live your truth. But it's viscous. Maybe that's the word.
Okay, there we go.
There,
it's got a girthy flavor.
Yeah. It's got girth. That's pubes keep getting in my teeth. So,
fuck you guys.
But they're usually bigger in alcohol. They're usually super just over the top in just about every switch way. I don't know. I forgot. Was this like 10% alcohol? It was 12.5%.
Oh, shit.
No, what do you think of this big boy?
This is better than most I've had. Because a lot of the other ones, they get that chocolate coffee vibe, and I do not dig that.
Yeah, sometimes that's not
this
a good
amount. This doesn't really have it, though.
Yeah, it's super malty, though. I mean, you get the chocolate coffee stuff from the malt. Usually, it's not like they actually... I mean, some people do add those ingredients, but not always.
I like the bubbles are brown. That's fun.
It's like when I take a bath.
Yeah, you know, once a month.
when I make my own bubbles. So anyway, Russian Imperial Stout. Picked it for the book. Though there's not much about Stalin in here.
Yeah, there's a little bit, yeah.
There's a fair amount of Stalin.
Still more about...
Let's say 70-30.
But going back to the Trump comparison... You're comparing Trump. Well, this book was written when Trump was still trying to figure out how to open the door to the Oval Office, which is like March. And then.
Which is now.
Well, they just leave it tight open.
Well,
and they have a plate
gate. He can't read the sign. This is the sign that says open, so he doesn't know.
So there's that couple months of presidency versus damn near 30 years of Stalin and a dozen years of Hitler.
Yeah,
that's unfair.
I mean, I think that it is. It's not a direct comparison. It's saying like the beginning signs of fascism.
Sure.
It's perhaps a heavy-handed.
It's more of
illusion,
a watch for how
this is how these things
develops.
Begin. They're all about the beginning signs of it. It's not like watch out for death squads.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, watch out for the
or,
way they say
or the
things.
The best way to hide from death squads
yeah.
is to, you know,
it's like,
XYZ.
You know, make sure that you keep things the way they were. Don't let people change institutions and don't let people change the way you speak or are people
yeah.
speaking. It's about the gestation.
Another reason why I think this book is at least somewhat relevant is that thinking back to, say, like a year and a half ago, if someone had said, you need to be worried about fascists, I would have gone, no, I don't. That's totally crazy. No one likes the KKK. They're like, no one would ever possibly, they're just gone. You know, they've been taken care of. But now, clearly, not actually just because of Trump, but also because of the events of Charlottesville last summer,
like,
clearly, there are way more fascists out there than I definitely realized.
Yeah, but
they're not going to take over America by any means.
No.
But there are
a
surprising amount of them.
A surprising amount. That's the part where
it seems
like they're on the rise.
Now, what about the so-called Antifa people, though?
What about them?
They're just as fucking fascist in their behavior as the fascists they seek to.
They're
know.
Not the same. I mean, yeah.
All right, hold on. There's like a video. Like, I love the pictures from Charlottesville where you see like old racist men, like because they're funny, and they're like, look at these people.
The Charlottesville Nazis were like our age.
Well, some of them were, but there's also pictures of people like waving Confederate flags. Right, that's like where it started.
We do that all the time.
Okay, wait. Pause. What is Antifa?
I'm not. It's like the anti-fascist protesters that go to like protest at other things that they think are fascist. So. At Charlottesville, there were Antifa people there, and the Antifa people are not peaceful protesters. They're not holding up something.
They're
the people who say it's like totally okay to punch Nazis. Now, it's not though. It's not.
Technically, yes.
But really, that's important though. I know it's funny, and I laugh at that. But like, just I disagree with you politically. Therefore, it's okay to hit you.
No,
that's
certainly.
Fascist. Like that's textbook
absolutely.
Definition.
It's definitely not okay to just beat people up in the streets. But they're not the same. They're not going for the same thing. Their end goals are totally
their
different.
Their end goal, though, is that, like, I don't like your speech. You shouldn't be allowed to say it.
Well, the end goal, actually, the end goal of the Nazis is to take over America and banish people who aren't white.
I'm not saying that they should be allowed to have their goal be achieved.
Of course.
But when you say, you can't say this thing, it's hate speech, it's hateful, I'm against it because you're a fascist, you shouldn't be allowed to say it. Like, that's, first of all, that's, like, un-American. Like, but secondly, that just makes it more interesting to people. It has the opposite effect of whatever they're trying to accomplish.
So I actually completely agree that they're making it worse. Antifa is making
it worse. Definitely
making it worse. And that
but they're
political
not
violence,
the same.
They're not the same. Well, political violence of
how are
any
they different?
Kind. Political what violence of almost
Nazis,
any kind.
Nazis, yeah, you're right. Nazis get parade permits.
Well, okay. I mean, if you're going to be anti-government, you're not going to go for a permit. That would be disingenuous.
Well, they're not anti-government. They're like,
here's
they're
a question.
They would be gung-ho, like, Bernie Sanders supporters. Like, very into big government.
They're probably Jill Stein supporters.
They probably are. So they're not anti-government. They're just anti-certain things, which is okay to be against, to not like ideas.
Yes, but to say that they're – what do? They punched a few Nazis. No, they're not like burning down cities or
– they burn down college campuses when there are speakers that they don't like.
Do that.
They do do that.
Hold on. So I read I think last summer while the stuff in Charlottesville was going on. I read an article, found some articles about Antifa, and one thing – did stick out to me. They said that the goal of Antifa is really, it's because it's not really an organization, it's just like a bunch of people who are kind of doing the same thing, but there's no, anyway.
Yeah,
so the goal is this. They think, and it's like a historical question, that nonviolent protest would not have stopped Hitler. That's like what the reason why they say they're doing what they're doing.
I guess they were kind of right.
I mean, it's not a hard thing to prove one way or the other.
Yeah, it's impossible to prove, but is that impossible? No, I don't think that's impossible. They might be right.
So, I mean, I think they do make it worse, and they take it way too far, but, like, in the end, is it, they feel like they have to fight back against people who want to basically exterminate everyone else.
Sure, but that still doesn't make it okay to punch them in the face for having a hateful opinion.
No, they should not do that.
But taking that idea, peaceful protest wouldn't have stopped Hitler. What is this? Well, you know what? Violent protest would have gotten India independence faster. What if I didn't argue that? So we should have violent protests then. Can you prove that wrong?
I mean, they're doing that.
I'm trying it now.
So, but the idea that, like, well, I have this idea about history that doesn't really, can't be proved wrong or right, and does not really matter to today because we're not in the same set of circumstances, therefore it excuses my reprehensible behavior, that doesn't seem like a fucking sound footing to do anything on. So what if I just make up anything?
Well, you can't just make up anything.
Violent protests would have
because most ideas are not believable. So you can't just make up anything.
Well, just say,
I would have said that,
violent
that
protests
was true a year ago. But.
Right, yeah, well, good point.
Violent protests would have gotten X, Y, and Z done faster, or would have gotten it done better?
Okay, here's a different question. Who are you more afraid of, Antifa or the actual fascists?
Antifa.
Why?
Yes, because the actual fascists are cartoonish morons. I'm not afraid of a Klansman. Now, maybe because I'm not a black man living in Mississippi, but I think that they're funny because they're pathetic. I think that they're
certainly
sad. I think that they're ignorant and hateful, but I'm not afraid of them changing the fabric of the country because nobody
could.
Well, I think Antifa though they've tapped into this like youth energy and disappointment and anger at the election results, and then they kind of channel that into different things.
I think many of them either.
But here's what scares me about Antifa, that if Antifa had their way, which is a lot easier to get their way than it would be to get the KKK's way, right? And if Antifa had their way and they say they ban certain speech, they say this speech is hateful and it's going to lead to problems.
Well, didn't they just have the thing like last month where Trump, the administration, banned certain words from reports in the government?
That is,
they banned
that
the
is
word
different.
They banned the word evidence-based from scientific reports.
That's an issue.
That's Orwellian.
It is. I agree. That is fucking horrifying. However, the idea that if they say no person could say certain things, that scares me more.
See, I just don't think that's what's happening.
But I believe there are people who believe this.
There
and are they
people
are the people that are
that
more
many,
on the Antifa side of the spectrum.
There are about as many of those people as there are of not actual Nazis.
I would say there are many more actual Nazis. Because the number of people that actually show up, number of Antifa people that actually show up at a rally is like 20. It'll be like 40,000. So the protest that was held in Boston.
The one where
like a week later.
People had a permit to have their. It was like a white pride thing or something like that, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now white pride politically not a very smart thing to do, but also not necessarily evil. By the
way, I think when they do it, it is though.
I, I've not heard their message because they got shouted down by 20,000 other people.
They tend to be white pride to the exclusion of other peoples.
Sure, I'm sure they are, but. I think that's how any sort of ethnic pride is going to work ultimately.
But in 40,000 counter-protesters, there were like 100 people Antifa.
I'm not saying Antifa is a threat to our liberty and way of life, but I think that everybody...
Fascist, though?
I think everybody knows who Nazis are. Everyone knows what that is. Everybody knows what the Klan is. I don't think there are too many people that are like, let me give them a shot. Except for stupid people who are like looking for a thing to blame their life's problems on. I think that's what attracts them. It's the same thing that attracts, you know, like...
All terrorist groups.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, my life is shitty. This guy's giving me a reason.
It's the Jews' fault.
Yeah, whatever.
Stay tuned for our upcoming episode on Fight Club.
But Antifa, the thing that scares me about it is that the fact that if some of them had their way, you would not be allowed to say certain things. And I think as soon as you open that door to have actual law that bans certain speech, aside from abrogating the First Amendment.
It's never going to happen.
But the fact that people even have that on the table, like, that they think that's a viable solution.
Yeah, but there's all kinds of crazy motherfuckers. We don't listen to them.
Right, but not all those crazy motherfuckers go up and protest when other people speak because they're like, this is bad. And then burn buildings down.
Sure, well, yeah, those Baptist church idiots. Antifa did not burn a building down.
Go find it. Look at what happened when that fucking guy did at Berkeley. The conservative podcast.
They burned down a building at UC Berkeley.
Want to look it up?
Yeah.
Look it up. This fucking violence.
I'm in complete agreement that they should stop and then that they are wrong. But I also think they're not as much of a threat as actual fascists.
Well,
so pepper spray. Because specifically, all right, so we're right now looking at a Washington Post article, black-clad Antifa members attack peaceful right-wing demonstrators in Berkeley. Just the fact
this is a Washington Post article.
Just the fact that the Nazis come out looking like the good guys because they were peaceful is the reason why Antifa
should stop. Right-wing does not mean Nazi.
No, I mean, it's not even calling them Nazis here. They're just saying right-wing.
Right-wing does not mean Nazi.
No.
That's fucked up.
Okay.
That's Orwellian.
Does right-wing mean fascist?
That's Stalin-y. Does right-wing mean fascist?
Yeah.
I think possibly.
Well, there you go. So,
but they're also left-wing fascists. Stalin was as far left-wing as you could go in some senses, right?
Hitler, can be a
both Hitler and Stalin were socialists.
Well, come on, dude.
Hitler had
socialists in the name.
And in its practices.
And it's called the National People's Republic of Korea. Is it?
In a sense, it is socialism.
It's not
as Marx would have liked it, but it's socialism.
It's not socialism. They were just Nazis. They put it in the name.
No, like they had certain economic practices that are socialist.
And they just had general European policies.
So, which are socialist.
Yeah, but to say like they were
I'm not saying it like it's a bad word, like I'm Rush Limbaugh, by the way. I'm not saying like socialist.
Certainly, but like to say like all these socialist people, like the Nazis, you know, they were socialists.
Sure,
that's like saying like I'm wearing socks. Like, it's like part of a thing, but it's really not the gist of what they're going for.
I think it's part of what their voters voted for.
They voted for to kick out the Jews.
That is one reason. But again, just like Trump, not everyone votes for the same reasons.
Certainly.
So some people voted for Hitler. Well, actually, Hitler actually never won any elections.
They burned vehicles. That's what they did.
Oh, okay,
sorry. They burned a building. They burned vehicles.
They but only burned vehicles.
Doesn't that happen
they only clashed.
That happens whenever the Red Sox win the World Series.
There's only 20 of them, but 231 got arrested. Fine. It's not so big a deal.
Dude, I mean, yeah, it is. They're crazy. They're fucking nuts. But to say that they are the same or worse
than Nazis. And this is the same
Nazis.
Level of thought, though, of the people who, like, had the thing where they demanded that day without white people at their college. Did you hear about this last year?
Yeah.
They're like, there should be a day without white people on campus. And then some white professor who was, like, a super lefty was like, no, I'm still teaching my class, thanks. And then kids fucking threw a shit fit because he would not leave.
No,
he was
certainly, yes. People take it too far.
Right. Well,
college students always take things too
far. They're
kids.
They're young, stupid people.
Yeah,
they're
and then when they turn 24, they say, oh, shit, I did a lot of stupid shit when I was a kid.
And then they get their degree and they get a job working at, you know, Goldman Sachs.
Yeah,
and they're like,
they do.
Whoa, capitalism rocks.
But, you know, and sometimes the Nazis, they do that when they're young and then they turn 24 and think, oh, shit, I shouldn't have done that. That's a bad look.
That's a bad look. Really?
And now everything's on the internet forever, so they're both all fucked. I guess at least the Antifa people wore masks.
Yeah.
That's true, yeah. They look like
smarter,
douchey bandits.
They're just, you know, shitty ninjas.
You know what? I agree with you there.
I mean, yes. I mean, we agree on pretty much all these things, but...
I'm not saying that they're not... I'm not saying Nazis are okay or a tolerable thing.
No, I didn't think you were saying Nazis
are okay. But I think the way that you fight them is not to say, shut up, I don't know who wants to hear you talk, but say, all right, let's hear what you have to say, and then let someone else speak, and then debate them, and then say, here's what everything that guy said is wrong. Here's the evidence to prove that everything he said is not correct.
The
people who are, like, entrenched, and this is in part of their life, and they have swastikas tattooed on their bodies, probably nothing will change their minds.
No. Nothing.
So, unfortunately, those people are kind of, like, lost. You worry about the people who are kind of in the middle.
This is like,
is that
the
right
the internet comments rule, where it's like, you try to debunk the internet, you're not going to change that guy's mind, but you're going to change people who are reading its mind.
Yeah, that makes sense. Though, just like the internet rule, Godwin's law. The first, as soon as you command for someone to Hitler, that's over.
I agree.
That's all Timothy Snyder
does. Does the law exist for non-internet things?
Well, it's funny that he actually says,
sure,
don't believe internet
be
news.
On the internet.
Snyder says specifically to...
We've gone full circle.
You know, Snyder says specifically to, like, support a free press. So we should open one of these beers.
Oh,
actually,
yeah.
By beers, I mean cider. And Jimmy, you got this.
I got beer. I got cider. Yeah. Pick one.
I'm going to do this one.
Which one's that?
The Lake Hopper.
This is by Citizen Cider. Cider for the people, by the people, or the other way around. I don't remember. It's probably by the people. That is very light.
Cider for the people, made by the people.
Looks like champagne.
This one is a non-traditional dry hop cider.
I like my ciders non-traditional.
Oh my god, that smells crisp.
Like a bouquet.
That's fucking delicious.
The problem with cider is that it tastes just like juice, and you forget that it will make you wake up in another state.
It is juice. Don't believe a word he said. It's fucking juice.
Isn't that what Hitler blamed?
Well, we don't leave here till we eliminate all the juice.
I've seen that picture on the internet, actually.
Auschwitz? Too soon?
This is actually quite nice.
I don't get... I mean, the hops are faint.
Do they put hops in cider?
This one's dry hopped.
But, I mean, is that a normal thing? I guess that's why it's non-traditional.
No, it's not traditional.
So progressive.
It's progressive cider. You know, I was at a place recently that had, as a gastropub, and it was like, basically on the menu, cocktails, beers, and appetizers, but they needed like an adjective for each one to make it cool. It was like, you know, I don't know, forget what it was, but it was like craft beer, fine. And then something about cocktails, like, you know, not crafted, that's how it'd be stupid, because crafted and crafted, but like, you know, artisanal cocktails or something like that.
One of those words that don't mean
anything. Well, you just slap it in front of a thing that you're selling and it now costs 10% more. But then it's a progressive pub fare or something like that. It's like, what does it mean progressive? Like, it believes in a living wage?
No, it means everything is in 7-4.
It's in 7-4. Very, very deep cut there on the progressive jokes.
Everything's named after a Rush song.
These are Rush potatoes. Oh, think of a better one. Progressive appetizers. Get your thinking caps.
I only know like two Rush songs.
It could be other progressive things.
I don't like progressive rock. It's terrible.
Cream Theater.
Is Cream progressive?
Not Cream. Dream Theater is.
Oh, Dream. Okay. Dream Theater, yeah. That's very progressive.
Yes, sandwiches.
There you go. That's the worst. That's the worst one. I wouldn't go into that restaurant because of that. Made a yes reference. I'm out. Fuck yes.
But it's like so pretentious, like progressive fucking snacks.
What does that even mean?
It just means that instead of, it's like they can't just say cheeseburger sliders. They have to tell you what frou-frou kind of cheese it is.
Is it like soy cheese or is it actual cheese?
It's some sort of fancier cheese, you know, like Munster
cheese.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But it's like with grass-fed beef and a brioche, not a bun, you know, like it has to say something fancier.
The bread is always like, it's a burger. The bread doesn't matter. Fuck off with that.
That is a hamburger delivery vehicle. That's all it is.
It's just
getting the meat
in
my mouth. Yes. Anything that gets that in my mouth.
It's a meat glove.
It's a good band name. The meat glove.
That's definitely got to be a band already, right?
Probably. Now, is Meat Glove a progressive band? I think they're probably more metal.
I think that's the Hamburger Helper guy's official name, actually.
He's Meat Glove.
You know, we've got a lot more ciders. I think we should just open another one.
All right, I'll take the other one Jimmy brought.
Delicious juices.
This one's about Mayor de Blasio. It's called the Dirty Mayor. It's a non-traditional ginger and lemon cider.
Oh, gingers. I don't want that.
Ginger?
Oh, who's the fascist now?
Did you ever see that MIA video?
Yeah, it's fucking dumb as balls.
I mean, I like the message.
MIA has this video for a song with Born Free. That looks like Sprite.
It looks exactly like smell like Sprite.
Yeah, where it's like, is the music video. MIA is not in the music video. It's just
they're just rounding up gingers and sending them across landmine fields.
Yeah, it's like this police state thing. And like at first, they just like raiding an apartment and getting this one guy. And he happens to be red-haired. That's not important until you realize when they throw him on the police bus, everyone there is red-haired. They're all gingers. And they're like living in a state where they are eliminating gingers. And I say,
oh my God.
Go for it.
This is excellent.
Weasley's getting the back of the bus.
<That's right.
laughs> This is very good.
This is not something that
cider,
I've had
another cider with ginger. Delicious.
Fucking ginger delicious. Beers are almost too good. They're like, man, these shouldn't exist because several people are going to die today because these are a thing.
That was actually our first drink on our first episode.
We had ginger ale, right?
Yeah.
Not your father's.
Oh, right, yeah.
This does have a ginger ale kind of vibe to it. The lemon is a nice little thing to start off.
It's got vitamins in it.
Yeah, I feel like I should. This is what you would, if you're really cool, you drink when you have a sore throat. many a ginger lemonade.
After you finish waxing your mustache.
Or when you're an alcoholic and you have a cold.
Yeah, true.
That's what I said. Ginger tea?
I think you just use whiskey for that. Burn it out.
It kills the germs.
It does. Alcohol kills germs. That's science. I don't know if you guys know science.
No, political science. Working on. And one more cider. And it has to do, this one, it's the same brand. It just works. I bought this one. Citizen Cider. Traditional. Oh, whoa, it's traditional. Of course I bought that. As the guy who, the more right-leaning guy, I got the traditional one. It's the semi-sweet cider, but it's called Unified Press, which, actually talking about press is one of the things he talks about in the book.
Yeah, definitely.
Though, I actually think he gets something that's kind of shitty, besides writing the entire book. He says, he specifically says you should follow the print press. Like, not internet press.
Or television.
He says you should watch television?
No, you shouldn't.
Yeah.
You
should
not. So, not television news.
Well, I mean, to an extent, he's not...
He's not wrong. News and the internet, they're full of fucking bullshit. Yeah. But the print media is not necessarily that much more accurate in many ways. Like, they have to print retractions and shit often anyway.
But they do, unlike the other ones.
Well, internet things do. Well, if you go to, like, BuzzFeed as your internet source. But the TV news cycle...
No, that doesn't count as legitimate source.
I'm sorry. It seemed to count when they were breaking the Russian dossier about Trump pissing on hookers. That was the news source.
No, the hookers were pissing on a bed. Obama slept in. They were pissing on him. He was pissing on them.
I'm sorry. I got that. I got the important part of the story wrong.
Yeah. The important part is, you know, like, who made the piss and where did it go? Those are two things. The only two things.
Who made the piss? Is that a children's book? Who made the piss?
Everybody poops. Who made the piss? It's a series.
And where does it go?
On a bed.
Oh, God. Which, pissing on the bed is one of the signs of a serial killer from when we do the Alienist.
Or just from doing this for a day.
or recording episodes.
This also tastes pretty good.
This one tastes the most like a standard kind of cider to me.
Yeah. I don't really like apple juice at all. It tastes like piss, so I hear.
I swear you said apple juice.
I did not. I've never had that. I'm not even sure what that consists of.
So, all right. So one thing he says in the book is support the free press. So now that it's been a year into the Trump administration, how is that going?
Well, who is? So if we don't count the internet, because the internet is shitty.
Yes.
Granted.
Wretched hive of scum and villainy.
That's
the internet.
Absolutely.
Mostly Twitter, but really the whole internet.
But you could follow us on Twitter at DrunkGuysBC. Very little news there. Mostly beer pics. And find out when each episode is coming out.
Yeah.
Tuesday.
As long as Twitter is still around.
Spoiler.
Spoiler alert. It's every Tuesday. But is it?
Keep the mystery alive.
Right. So the problem with internet news sources is that anybody can make one. Right, buying a domain name is easy. We did it. We're fucking drunk.
So not only can anyone just buy a domain name and put together a website that doesn't look totally awful, sponsor us, Squarespace. So put together a website that looks kind of legitimate, and you can fool people, at least some people, into thinking you're a legitimate news source. So that's one problem. The other thing with the internet is because it's not like the newspaper days when they had like a morning edition and an afternoon edition, and any news that happened in between had to wait till the next edition. When you know something, people just like print it. People just like put it on, write the article as fast as possible, because whoever get those articles out first usually will get most of the traffic. So in terms of like checking sources or making, you know, more nuanced, thoughtful decisions about should we print the Trump dossier, just put it on the internet without verifying anything, that was probably not a good idea. I'm sure it made them a shitload of money, though.
Well, that's not problem. Good. That's not the point. That's what I'm saying.
Like, what kind of llama are you, like, two years ago? So
It did it, like, 2 days ago. I'm sure you can go on the BuzzFeed right now, and on the top few clicks, it's going to be, like, 7 chihuahuas that just can't. That's going to be a page.
What can't they do? I've got to know.
The 8 groundhogs who are ready for February. Like, that's their thing, and just gifs. And you're like, that's funny, that gif. Oh, that's a funny gif, too. Oh, that was great. I love this. This is the news. Don't worry, we still haven't had the most alcoholic beer. Yeah.
We haven't? There's another one?
There's one more beer. Oh, yeah, you were trying to rush through that. Nice try.
This is just really good.
Yeah, this is just like a pleasant detour.
I really like it. So anyway, let's...
But the thing, but hold on. The press. You're right. The newspaper... But the thing is, the newspaper press and the television press, like, they have to make their money on, like, people buying their product. So there's not necessarily a stronger incentive, to be honest.
So that's actually one thing that's changed since the internet age. It used to be that you didn't have to make your money on people buying your product because most of the money came from want ads. So the want ads really financed the rest of the journalism, or the vast majority of it. I mean, sure, they did pay, they did, you know, charge for, most newspapers did charge a fee, but that's not where they made most of their money. Most of their money came from non-partisan sources. Just from the want ads. So they had much more freedom to actually have some integrity.
Or to just go for whatever they wanted to write at the same time, though.
It's also true, but also because of Craigslist, which completely destroyed the want ads industry.
Thanks a lot, Craigslist.
Yeah, thanks, Craig. Now we get Fox News.
Now I just have to go on the internet to find the BBWs in my neighborhood who are lonely and are looking for a massage partner.
Nope, I'm good. I'm good.
I need someone to mow my backyard.
So yeah, the economics of the media industry, of specifically journalism has changed a lot. And that is not helping things at all.
It's not. But TV news has always been reliant on advertisers.
So for a long time...
Well, except when it was like network news.
So for a long time when it was just the net, when there were only three networks. The networks, when they did the news, they didn't know they could make money from the news, so they didn't bother to try. They really just put on the news for half an hour every night. It was sort of like their public service, and it was like, well, we'll try and make money and all other things.
You'd watch the news and then you'd stay on the same channel and watch whatever came on afterwards.
Exactly, but they weren't trying to specifically do the most outrageous thing or show the most like cat videos.
News used to be boring,
but it actually had a little bit more substance to it. Yeah, so that's partly what made it boring.
It was just news. It wasn't like. Holy shit.
The thing that made
Who's
news...
Whose vagina fell out of their pants today?
How does that happen? It's negative space.
The thing that made news divisions realize... let me finish my point. The thing that made news divisions realize that they could make money from news was the introduction of 60 Minutes. Because 60 Minutes, when it came on, it was wildly popular. And because it was wildly popular, they could sell the ad space for a ton of money in this network. What network is it?
CBS
maybe. Whatever it's on, they made a ton of profit. And that was around the year 1980, maybe 81,
I think 60 Minutes is about 79. This is mad old.
To the internet.
1980 is a long time ago, man.
That is a long
time. It's almost 40 years.
Oh my god, Nate is Googling this like a grandpa.
1968? Oh, the fuck. Well, okay, somewhere
around...
Yeah, because
I had Morley Safer on and he was only 99.
Hey, it's got a 7.6 on IMDb. People have bothered to rate 60 Minutes on IMDb.
Didn't like the ending. Poor character development. There's no continuity. It's like they make it up each week.
So anyway, 60 Minutes started to make a ton of money, and then other news divisions, the other networks realized that they could make a lot of money too. So then it became what stories are going to get the most viewers, who can sell the most ad time, and how do we present them? And it's mostly the actual, like, more nuanced, like, more serious stories. Nobody wants to pay attention to those, so of course they don't. But then because it's not on, nobody learns about it. And instead you get like an 8-minute segment of real news, and then you got a bunch of commercials for like, you know, medications, and because mostly old people, and then you get some like, you know, cat videos, or you know, this
Kim
cat,
Kardashian gave birth to a dolphin.
Exactly. You get the fluff piece, the feel-good pieces that practically, when there's so many other crazy things going on, and that's what they show.
It was awesome. We watched the nightly news in this household sometimes with Molester Holt, and he used to.
You're gonna make that happen.
I'm gonna make it stick. I'm gonna say it so much that he himself is gonna find out one day, and he's like, I guess I should just start doing that. But he used to sign off and say, well, that's going to do it for us on like whatever day of the week. You know, that's going to do it for us on a Tuesday night. Thanks. Have a good night, America. Suck a dick. You know, whatever he said. But he changed it now. And it's like, thank you for spending part of your evening with us. Like something more thoughtful. Because sometimes he would end it and it'd be like, and 11 Marines were blown up in a Humvee in Afghanistan. That's going to do it for us on a Tuesday. It's kind of like really callous, but really funny at the same time. Like, I've had enough. Fuck that shit. Speaking of unsubtlety.
Oh, no. What is that?
This is the other beverage I brought to this shit fest. This is by Evil Twin. It is called Molotov Heavy, named after the cocktail. You can see that is a heavy duty, but you can pour your own out. That is an IPA.
Oh, man.
That's 17% alcohol.
Oh, Jesus.
It looks syrupy.
Thick, I believe, is the word for it.
It looks like it stretches an asshole when it goes into it.
I think it's winking at me.
Oh, my God. That is
smells bitter.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's
that
intense.
Is really strong.
I actually like this a lot.
Of the all
Mister,
the people,
I hate IPAs.
Or oh, not, we it's not terrible.
It's
not terrible.
It's pretty good though.
I still had a lot of cider flavor in my mouth, but in terms of IPAs, it's one of the better IPAs I've had.
Well, yep. Because it has to be so sweet to get to that 17% alcohol point.
Yeah,
that balances out the bitterness.
Mm. Yeah, this one 17, that's too much.
Still dangerous.
Like, this tiny cup is a full beer's worth.
Our little tasters, yeah, pretty awesome. I've had it before. I bought it maybe 2 years ago, last time I was able to buy this. Came in at 22, so I had to drink at 22.
Did you die?
I'm here today to tell you that I did not.
I don't know, you didn't die. You could have come back. You got better.
This is the sixth sense. I'm a ghost. I've been dead the whole time.
I see beer people.
Weird awkward silences on all these recordings when Mike is talking.
There's just dead air there. You guys laugh at jokes that weren't made.
Very dead air.
When Nate tried that one. Oh, wow. So, going back to this book, as we're supposed to be talking about. I mean, I think his general gists are, for the most part, okay. His general, like, lessons.
I think that it's a cautionary tale. He's not saying, we're fighting fascism right now. He's like, check out these warning signs and watch out for them.
Sure.
Educate yourself.
Though some of his, like, tips are stupid. Like, one of them is, have a passport.
Yeah,
like,
some of those are
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
Yeah.
Bring a towel. That's a cool.
We're American. We go wherever we want, whenever we want. That's science.
Yeah, but, stupid passport. There were definitely some people in Germany in the late 1930s that really wished they had some passports. The
passports were revoked anyway.
Well, that's why. You gotta get out before they're revoked.
Well, yeah, but I'm not sure. That's just not like even why he's saying that, though. That's not even the point he's making in that section. He's more like, learn from other people around the world.
No, I think he was making the point that you need to be ready to leave. I'm just in case.
Contribute to good causes. I love how one of our former presidents called 1,000 Points of Light, the network of charities. That's Bush Sr. I'm sure he didn't fucking like Bush Sr., but now he does.
Everything's relative.
That's for sure, man.
I mean, that's what they're talking about.
Here's another thing, by the way, that I thought was total horseshit. Or, all right, during the campaign, this is from page 88. During the campaign of 2016, we took a step towards totalitarianism without even noticing by accepting as normal the violation of electronic privacy. And he's talking about, like, WikiLeaks, essentially.
Yeah.
And, like, okay, but that's not new in 2016.
Yeah, that's been happening for a long time.
So that's fucking dishonest to say that it was only during 2016 we took that step. We didn't take it earlier. Bullshit. And we didn't also take, I mean, not that it's quite the same thing, but President Trump, or candidate Trump, or just asshole Trump at the time, thinking he's just having a one-on-one conversation with Billy Bush about grabbing pussies, knowing that that tape would be released to people, that's also a violation of privacy of some sort.
I think he knew he was on a television show.
But he wouldn't know it was a hot mic.
But and it doesn't matter, because now he said that wasn't him.
Yeah, that's right. It wasn't
actually That's awesome.
Him. It wasn't him.
Like, it was that's fake. It wasn't me.
Yeah, so clearly.
The Shaggy defense. Just say it wasn't you.
I plead the Shaggy.
It wasn't me. She even caught you on camera, wasn't it?
She even caught you on a hot mic, wasn't
it? I'll find it. I don't know. I mean, some of it super simplistic.
Be ready to flee.
Practice corporeal politics. What the fuck does that even mean? Like, go to marches?
It means, like, show up hats? And don't just write stuff on the internet. Like,
write a book.
Don't just be an internet troll. Yeah. Troll in real life.
Okay, here, learn from peers in other countries. This is the one where we talked about having a fucking passport. Make sure you and your family... Okay, keep up your friendships abroad, or make new friends in new countries. The present difficulties in the United States are an element of a larger trend, and no country is going to find a solution by itself. Make sure you and your family have passports. He's not talking about fleeing there. He's talking about looking to other places for information and influence into, like, what's the best thing to do. And then he talks exclusively about the Ukraine and Russia, and their fucking 2013.
It's just Ukraine, not the Ukraine.
No, I mean... It's not just any Ukraine. He's talking about the Ukraine.
Just the one.
Like, which Ukraine? The Ukraine? Oh, okay. It's the Ukraine, right?
The America?
Yeah.
The USA Today?
Whatever. But yeah, so he's talking there about, that's not about flee, though that might be good advice, but that's not what he's talking about in that context.
He's saying go and talk to people from other places.
Yeah. Like, other people have other perspectives and ideas.
Or other people have actually seen how fascism has developed in their country.
So go on vacation to their country and see what a shithole it is.
Talk to an old German at a bar and then go home.
Tell me about the war, Fritz.
No passports required.
I was just following orders.
I'm gonna keep drinking this beer because this was $20 as well.
Was it?
Yeah. I'd seen it at the store for several trips when I was just buying beer to drink, but I couldn't justify it. I was like, oh, it's for the podcast, honey. I couldn't.
Yeah. Nothing but the best.
And that's justification if I've ever heard it.
Worked for me. I mean, so at the end of the day, I think the important thing from the book, and whether maybe this was his intention or not, and I can't believe I'm about to say this sentence because it makes me want to throw up, but it's important to have conversations about these things. Ugh.
And we just did.
We did.
Oh, look at us.
Look how fucking educated we are.
Someone at NPR just got a boner. What this nation needs is a conversation about whatever it is the grossest sentence. I hate when people say that.
It doesn't mean anything.
But you know when people say that? That's when they say, you're wrong. We need to have a conversation about this so I can tell you why you're wrong.
Yeah.
It's never like, I'm ready to have my mind changed.
I'm fully convinced that no one has ever been convinced of anything.
Whoa. inceptioned.
That's inception, is it?
You just said you're convinced that no one's been convinced.
Oh, right. Shit, I forgot
this
about
is a fucking Escher drawing? How does that work?
The stairs go everywhere, man. I don't know, I mean, like, when they have debates, most people are just like, I concede a point or two, but I still stand by whatever I thought originally. Maybe, like, some people listening were like, okay, I changed my mind. There's still people who believe that the Earth is flat.
Okay, when people do change their minds, they don't change their minds. When people do change their minds, they don't change their minds all at once. Having the conversation, people will not back down in public in front of others, in front of somebody else. That just, like,
gotta,
does not happen.
You gotta break them down over time.
But some people might, like you said, they'll concede the other person had a point, just to be polite. They might not even believe it, but they'll concede it. But you know what? Over time, people's minds can change. But they won't do it in the moment, right then you're talking.
I mean, they really only change their mind when our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ enters their soul and helps them do it. I mean,
enters their hole?
Yeah. Exactly. That's right. He goes in there. And then they're like, oh, hello. The good news.
Take my blood.
Oh, God. Anyway. Fine, we had a conversation. Good thing to do. Go read the book. It'll take you 2.5 dumps. And then you two, you can have a conversation with somebody you know. Just don't tell me you read the right on the toilet bowl.
And also, tell us what you thought. Send an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
Or follow us on Twitter at drunkguysbc, as in book club. Or visit our website at
drunkguysbookclub.com.
There it is.
He said with the most enthusiasm.
That was our speaking spell.
That was NPR voice.
Join us next week when we read A Confederacy of Dunces by John Kennedy Toole.
Thanks for listening.